people here that want to speak on this item. So I want to take 1276 next. Assuming we can. City attorney is talking to the council clerk. That's never good, but I think we can do this.
Item 1276.
Okay.
Authorize a competitive solicitation for an on-body camera system for police officers.
Thanks. I'm going to call up Lieutenant John Scruggs to talk about this item, but let me just set the stage this way. My work on this issue began in the first part of last year when in a short time period I had two teachable moments. One, I went to the U.S. Conference of Mayors and tried on the Google Glass device and realized when I saw that piece of transformative technology that police work could and very likely would change as a result of that kind of technology. Then in February, a couple weeks later, a man named Merle Hatch, who was a career criminal who had been in and out of the criminal justice system for charges that ranged from burglary to bank robbery to homicide, forced his way out of Adventist Hospital in the middle of the night by breaking a telephone receiver and putting it in the waistband of his shorts or pants and convincing the staff at the hospital that that was a gun. He then went out into the parking lot where there was a standoff with police officers, and eventually he ran towards them, counting down in a loud voice, and they shot and killed him. There was a young couple who lived near there who took out their iPhone and held it up over the windowsill of their apartment out the window and recorded that incident. That recording helped make it clear what happened in that incident and whether or not force was used unfortunately, inappropriately, or inappropriately. And I believe that that's what body cameras will do for us as a community, among other things, that it will give us factual information that we can then as a community use to evaluate whether we're using force correctly, whether we're treating our citizens properly. I think this is, again, a transformative technology that is here. The question is, do we as a community want to embrace it? There's a great deal of policy work that needs to be done before these devices are put into use. And I know Lieutenant Scruggs wants to talk about that, as I do as well. But should we cross the threshold and get this equipment? I believe so. Is there work to be done before it's ever used? Absolutely. And with that, let me turn it over to you, John, and talk more.
Thank you, Mayor. Members of the Council, my name is John Scruggs. I'm a lieutenant with the Portland Police Bureau. I'm here to talk today about putting on a request for proposals on-body cameras. The Portland Police Bureau has been looking at this technology for the last 2 years. And as you know, in a former bump process, we were looking at outfitting more police vehicles with in-car camera systems. At that time, we asked you to set aside that money because we saw that the technologies were getting better for on-body cameras. And at this point, we believe that that technology is at a place where we could employ it successfully out in the field. There are a number of questions with on-body cameras, and we are prepared to address those. I will say that we believe that this is one way to help close the gap in community trust. Oftentimes, we go to a incidents where there is no independent viewpoint of what occurred. On-body cameras will give us a unfiltered viewpoint of what actually occurred at that situation. We have seen that in other areas of the country where this has been employed, specifically Rialto, California, that the use of force by officers wearing body cameras went down by over 50%, and we also saw that complaints went down as well. We expect to see the same results here using MAV technology, which we have in some of our cars, the in-car camera system. We did a study, and it's not quite as scientific, but we also saw a dramatic reduction in the use of force by officers who were using the cars with the in-car camera system, and we also saw about the same amount of complaints. It was a small sample size. That being said, I think there are a lot of questions out there, and we're prepared to work with the community to answer some of those questions. There are privacy concerns, obviously, and we believe that we can work through those issues with the community. This is one of those places where I think if you look at all the benefits that cameras could provide us, versus some of the drawbacks, I think we're still in the positive zone where this is a piece of technology that would help enhance the community police partnership. That being said, I do want to make certain that the police bureau is not relying on this technology to bridge the gap with the community. That is a whole separate topic, and that is something that technology cannot accomplish for us. We still have to be out and engaging the community, making community contacts and partnerships. That aside, on-body cameras will also fill in the gaps of information that sometimes our community wants. And for that reason, we're hoping you'll support us putting a proposal out to purchase on-body camera systems.
So, Mayor Hales, Lieutenant Scruggs referred to having a process with the community to decide the protocols. How do you envision that happening, and would any administrative rules or protocols come back to council for approval before the cameras would be used?
Good question. Go ahead.
I can answer the first one. The second one I'm not familiar with. So we think that we should probably do a few community public forums. That's what we envision doing in the coming year. We're also meeting with the district attorney's office and a lot of other IPR. There's a lot of different parties involved in this. And then taking some of those ideas and incorporating our policy. And as you know, the Portland Police Bureau actually puts our policies online before we implement them. And there's also the ability for the community to give input at that time as well.
So I would suggest, Mayor, that a more formal process, potentially with a task force that would work on this, might be more appropriate in this particular case. Okay. Because it's, I mean, I'll just ask some of my questions right now. What about Miranda rights? Can these camera recordings be used to then prosecute somebody who's alleged to have done a crime?
Yeah, it's actually evidence of a crime. If you look at ORS 165.540, which we're actually working on legislative process to allow for on-body cameras to be used on the street, we have to give a verbal warning that someone is being recorded when appropriate. And obviously, once we've done that, and if we enter, into some kind of altercation with somebody, obviously the video is going to be part of that evidence.
Is it envisioned that these cameras would be switched on at all times?
There's a couple of different ways to do that, but we are envisioning that there is some discretion. We think that on-body cameras, police transparency, will intersect with privacy, and so we have to adapt rules that allow us to turn it off. If you're interviewing somebody who's a victim of a sexual assault, you probably don't want that on camera. If you're taking a child abuse call or you're in a hospital, there's times when you're going to want officers to be able to turn these things off. So you're going to want a policy that ensures that it's on the majority of the time on calls for service. But at the same time, you want to allow some flexibility so that these personal conversations that may be recorded or places where you don't want a camera, that the officer has the ability to turn it off.
And Mayor, we may have to do something at the legislature, because I know that with 911 calls, they are a public record. And so since you don't have the opportunity to ask the person if they're willing to be recorded while you're maybe going there, so I think it's an enormously, the protocols of how it's implemented are enormously complex. And although I recognize that today we're authorizing going out to bid, I would like some assurance that if the cameras will not be used until that process, the formal process, has been had, and so that it comes back to council for adoption of any administrative rules.
Oh, yeah, you have that assurance. We will not use this equipment until we have policy in place to guide its use, and that's a public conversation as well as a legislative conversation, because the legislature has to make some changes in order for us, most likely has to make some changes in order for us to reach the privacy expectations that Lieutenant Scruggs just described. And for this to be even practicable to use. But we think the legislature is very interested in having that discussion, and that that's going to be queued up in February when the legislature begins work. So that's one of the antecedents before this goes into effect. There's likely changes. And we're going to work with the American Civil Liberties Union, a lot of other groups that care about those privacy issues. Frankly, it's also an issue with the news media. So the news media organizations will be at the legislature pushing for likely pushing for a lot of disclosure. There's a line there, of appropriateness in some cases, where citizens are not going to want their interview with a police officer to be made public, and I can understand that.
And I'm concerned about the data storage, what the plan is for mm-hmm. data storage, for looking at the video. What's the plan for future data conversion? And I understand from talking to the auditor's office over time that videos are not considered forever, so that there's some, that's why we have our council records transcribed from the video. So I'm wondering what's the plan for that challenge?
So there's three questions there. Number one, retention of the video would be set by if it's a felony, what kind of call it was. If the officer used force during the call, you know, obviously you'd want to keep it longer. Conversations that come in to be, you know, a non-criminal, we'd probably get rid of those earlier. We work with IPR originally with our MAV system, the in-car camera system, and we set it at 6 months because we figured if there was something that went in that interaction, it was negative, that gives a community member an opportunity to go file a complaint. We'd still have the video of it. After that, we get rid of it, and that we'd probably have a similar policy for our body-worn camera system. So the storage of it, you know, there are two different types of ways to store it. One is cloud-based and one is internal. We're looking at both, but we certainly have the capacity to internally store data. We know approximately how much data we would need to store based on, you know, some set principles on what the retention policy would be. Obviously, you know, felony crimes that were Measure 11, we'd have to store those for a lot longer, and we'd have to incur those costs yearly. And then there's cloud-based, and you're charged a fee for that as well. And then I think your last question, if you would repeat that to me, I think I have the right answer for you.
About converting them to...
So converting, I think forensically we haven't come up with and actually no one has. I've been researching this. If you take something as like an MP4 and you change it to a new data type file, because right now, you know, we have evidence, we have VHS tapes in our property evidence room that are from homicides where we videotape crime scenes from a long time ago. But we still have those, and we still have a player for those. But I don't think you're going to go out and find a VHS tape available for sale at Walmart. So we're talking about converting this data to something new, or either keeping some system available that would be able to read the files as they currently are. Because if we take that file and we change the MP4 to something else, and the school, nobody's made a legislative stand on this, and I haven't seen anything in the courts yet, are we physically changing evidence by changing the file type? And we don't know, and no one knows. But that is a consideration that we've been looking into. Or do we just house something that can always read this type of file and keep that available in case a trial goes later on or someone asks for post-conviction relief and some kind of a Measure 11 case?
And in response to your first question about the length of time these files would be kept, I'm assuming in the ongoing discussion there will be a consideration of how do we protect from using these videos for surveillance of people who haven't committed a crime?
Yeah, I think that would be directed in a policy. And obviously there are already statutes on the books for that. That 165 covers that a little bit. And then as far as releasing the videos, you know, internally most of these software systems that you get with on-body cameras allow you to lock down a video so that only the officer who took it can see it or their supervisor. You have the ability to lock a video so in case it's an officer-involved shooting or serious use of force, that only an investigator can see it and nobody else. We can lock these different ways, but there's audit trails also. So if somebody released a video or we had to release a video, we'd have an audit when it was done and what time the video was released to who. So there's a bunch of auditory ability within the software system comes with on-body cameras.
And
but protecting people's right, you know, privacy, we're looking at ORS 192.501, which is the, you know, public release of information, and seeing if there's a way we can protect victims and witnesses and require that they're notified and that they give their signature before we release that kind of video. So
I'm assuming since this is a measure to authorize a competitive solicitation for the system, that those kinds of protections would need to be in any system that we would purchase, and you'll put that into the procurement.
Absolutely. That would be in the scaling of the rating of how we accept that kind of bid.
And I'd be interested to hear from folks testifying what else they'd like to make sure that we, in any system that we buy, what capacity does it need to have in order to be able to have the confidence that it's going to be able to be used in whatever the task force feels that it decides and the council approves.
Absolutely, and I just want to make clear, this is just one part of many pieces that we're moving along as we go down this road. So, you know, it's not as easy as stepping and putting a GoPro on an officer and saying, go out and do good work. There are a lot of different little pieces, and this is just one of them. We are working on policy already, you know, looking at practices throughout the United States where people have already been using them, looking at legislative fixes, looking at the technology that's available, the audit trails, and then even just down to training. So we are looking at all these different things, and ideally they're all moving around at the same time. Any RFP we put out before we'd sign a contract, we'd make sure we had all the pieces of this puzzle put together so that we have a coherent plan as we move forward. So it's not going to be a simple process.
I mean, I guess this is obviously a very timely topic, but it does seem to me we're putting the cart before the horse. We have not received any legislative protections for what can be released to the public or to the media. You know, I can envision some very horrendous footage that, you know, of officers involved in shootings, you know, God forbid officers being shot. And is that stuff going to be public? And I don't, you know, I'm not so sanguine that the legislature is going to provide us those protections, because I know how powerful, you know, the Oregon Newspaper Association can be. I worked on the 911 disclosure before Commissioner Fritz did too, and
we haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah, so I mean, we're going to commit to spend $800,000, and we don't even know we're going to have the types of privacy protections that we, I think, all of us up here probably agree should be in place, and many in the public.
Well, again, I think that the way to look at this is that we're asking to put out the RFP. We're not asking to buy. This is just the ability to put it out to see the technology, and the folks are interested in providing this technology to the police bureau. And we can put contingent in any RFP that we would not initiate this contract if we didn't have these set of provisions. There are many, many companies that would be more than happy to outfit the Portland Police Bureau with on-body cameras, and I'm sure that if we put that kind of contract language in there, that it wouldn't be executable if we found out that this is not the way
so,
we could go.
But be clear on that. So it's, the intent would not to be an award and a contract to a vendor until we have what we all believe should be the adequate privacy protections in place.
I believe it.
State law.
I think that unless we can amend some portions or get some amendments in the state law, I don't see that we push this forward. But that'd be a higher up decision. I do think that putting out the RFP and seeing the technology come in and who would like to bid on it and work on the other issues as we move forward before we deploy it is a smart move. You know, there's no guarantees what the legislature is going to do, but I also think there is, from what I can understand and see and read in the paper and people I talk to, there is a lot of folks who really support this technology and want their officers outfitted with it. Obviously, the Obama administration actually just went out and was saying they're going to provide $75 million for this. We'll wait to see how that works out.
Right. So let me pose that question even more clearly. I think I want to test my understanding of it and get John to confirm or correct, and then get back to the core of the issue. Why do this now? Well, what we're doing is we're asking vendors, what would you supply us in the form of equipment, and how much would it cost? What the council's done so far is appropriated some money for the purchase of the equipment. We don't know if that's the right amount of money. We're pretty sure it's not. And we also need to know how many people do we have to manage this data once we start acquiring it. We've learned a little bit about this from having in-vehicle cameras, which we already have. And this is the chance to find out what will people supply us and how much will it cost. It isn't a threshold decision of, yes, we are buying it, yes, we're buying this kind, or that we're using it in any particular way, but it's information that we need to have to proceed. I think it's the right thing to do to find out what the equipment's going to cost and who would supply what while we're having the community conversation about policy and the legislative conversation about privacy. I think it's right to do all those things at once.
I'm just looking for a commitment that no hardware will be purchased.
That comes right back here to
council. Until we have the privacy concerns addressed by the legislature.
You have my commitment, and you also have the right as a city council, which we have on any contract, to vote on the contract when there is one. But we're a long way from that day.
Yeah, we'd have to come back before you before we could purchase anything. This is just authorizing us to put out the bid. City ordinance, anything over $500,000, we have to do that. So this is, and we believe it will cost over $500,000. So this is just
giving us. All I'm saying is we shouldn't be awarding anything until we know we have the privacy concerns addressed by the legislature.
Right. Absolutely.
And the law by the governor.
So can I, in light of that, can I just get clarification from the financial impact? Because we appropriated $834,000 and change for the purchase somewhere downstream of this system. But the financial impact says the one-time cost, and the cost is of what's before us, which is the solicitation process, is approximately $500,000 to $1 million, which will be funded partially from the $834,000. The way I read that is we could end up allocating the entire appropriation just to this initial step, which is the solicitation process, before we even decide whether we want to acquire them. Is that correct?
No. That number is about if we actually bought them. We're putting a ballpark. There's cameras out there for $299 each, all the way up to well over $1,000. So we gave you a rough number of what we think overall, if we were to outfit the, you know, and it depends on how many people we outfit, but you know, the sworn officers in uniform on the street is about 473 at any given time. It fluctuates. Outfitting every one of them with an on-body camera, and then the technology, you know, for, you know, software and all those other upgrades you have to do to have that technology.
So what is, since the only thing before us is a competitive solicitation, what's the cost of that?
Oh, you mean to conduct the the RFP?
Yeah, because we're not actually
not that much.
That's
going to be staff time.
Yeah.
All right. So in the cost section, you have assumed that there's a solicitation and we enter into a contract, because the figure is between 500,000 and a million, which makes Commissioner Saltzman's question, I think, all the more germane. This is technically just authorizing a solicitation. The mayor has made a commitment, and our contracting rules require that if we were to actually contract with some provider, we'd have to come back to council. And at that time, we could determine whether state law has changed to our satisfaction, meeting the privacy concerns we may have as a council.
Absolutely. And we put that number on there because we believe that that's the ballpark of where this RFP would end up if someone comes back and says, we'll supply you.
And the Bureau also put that number on there because we require them to. If we are asking for the construction of a new section of pipe or a bridge, we ask for an engineer's estimate. This is much the same, where we say, what do you think this range of cost will be for this? Now let's go to the private sector and say, what will you supply?
So, Mayor, the one other thing that I think would be helpful for the council to know is we recently had our work session on legislative agenda, and we really didn't talk about this issue in any depth from the point of view of the privacy protections that we may be seeking through the legislature, and I assume Senator Burdick will be in the lead on this. Is it your intention to furnish us with a roadmap of the kinds of protections that the city will be backing in this session?
Yeah, I think the council needs to deliberate on that question as we finalize our legislative package. What do we believe we need to have in changes to state law in order to responsibly implement on-body cameras? I think that's a discussion we need to have, and then tell our legislative staff, go seek these changes.
Well, to make an informed decision on that, it would be helpful to have the experience of any other state that has grappled with this,
yeah.
Any best practices that have been developed by an association or the Council of Mayors or whatever, and then an indication of what, in light of what success we had in the past creating these things. This is a very, very urgent, this is a very complicated issue of shielding from public disclosure certain information, and there's a lot of people who fight for transparency who are going to oppose us unless it's narrowly crafted, and then that in and of itself could be challenged in court. So this is not an incidental matter, and I would welcome a broader discussion before we even deliberate this, some indication of what are the protections we're likely to see, what states have been successful in seeking those kinds of protections, and what does the community think about, is that a satisfactory firewall to prevent the kind of disclosure of things which could cause real heartburn to people. And there's one other piece to this that I think we should talk about, which is referenced in one of the letters we got. At some point, someone's going to file a complaint with the auditor, one of our oversight bodies, and this issue will come up about, let's look at the footage. And there's a whole host of questions about who can require that video be put before the auditor, before some oversight body, and does someone, by invoking their rights under our various police accountability measures, do they somehow waive their right to say, I don't want that piece of evidence being brought forth because my privacy was violated, or I want my child shielded who's also in the footage or whatever. So it seems to me there are a lot of very complicated issues we're going to have to work out.
I agree. And some of those, though, can actually be addressed with policy. I mean, we can have a policy that prohibits filming when we go into a hospital or when we respond with Portland Fire and Rescue and it turns out it's a medical-only call. We can address some of those issues and privacy concerns even within the policy outside of state law. We can be more restrictive, and I'm guessing that our policy probably would be.
And is it your intention to have that policy drafted and presented to us before we're asked to approve a contract?
I think that we'll have another discussion on that, but I think that this policy is going to be developed over time, and I think that we'd have to, before we even come back to you and ask for the authorization to buy it, we'd have to have some of these other questions taken care of. What does the legislature do with 165.540? What do we end up with 192 and, you know, 0.501? Where does that end up? And then the policy. And community input. So
yeah,
this is a big issue.
Yeah, we're in limbo with the legislature, or worse, if the session ends without resolution on these issues. I can't conscience spending the money on equipment that we don't have the ability to use responsibly, because if it's going to start disclosing information about citizens that it's not reasonable to disclose, then we're just making it worse, not better. But I think, again, what we're finding out with this solicitation is, what would you sell us and how much would it cost? We're not saying we're going to buy it. We're not saying we're going to buy it from you. And we're not saying how we're going to use it. But we're going to find out what people would sell us and how much it would cost. And that's one piece of, obviously, a very complex set of questions.
And that would come back to us regardless of whether it's $299 or
yep.
$500,000 or
yep,
whatever.
Exactly. Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, other questions at this point for Lieutenant Scruggs? There may be more, and the Chief's here as well. So stand by, and let's hear from citizens that are signed up to speak. Thank you.
We have 16 people signed up. The okay. first three, please come on up.
There's a disabled guy in the house.
Yeah. Sure. Come on. We can call the disabled person first. That'd be fine.
And then we'll also take Eric Haro and Joe Walsh.
Okay. Come on up.
See you, buddy.
Good morning.
Do you mind? Eric has asked me to go first because I'm presenting as part of.
Don't mind at all. Come on up, John, please. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
My name is Mark Woodleaf. I'm representing concerned citizens of Portland. I appreciate the thoughtful conversation and consideration of the matter, but I do want to say that in the overall big picture, if you had a broken leg, you wouldn't put a Band-Aid on it. You would contact orthopedic surgeons and medical officials. What we have here is not something to put a Band-Aid on. What we have here is something to look at systemically and consider more systemic policy. I hear you talking a lot about policy, and I think that's wise. And I realize we're a long way down the road, but this is not a Band-Aid that we want to put on the issue of accountability for our police officials. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Joanne, please.
Good morning, Mayor.
Oh, push the button there. There you are.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members. Could I please get two additional minutes?
Sure. You've been working on this issue quite a bit. Please.
Yes, I have. Thank you so much. I wanted to respond to something that Sergeant Craig said,
Lieutenant Scruggs.
I get police officers mixed up.
Put your name in the record.
My name is Joanne Hardesty, and I am here today representing the Portland Right to the City Coalition. And before I get into what we want to present, I wanted to respond to what I heard from the previous speaker. And so as someone who's run nonprofits, if you want to find out what people charge for things, what you do is ask them to send a letter of inquiry. You don't require a business to spend significant time responding to an RFP with a lot. What you do is say, this is what we're thinking about. Would you please tell us what you would charge us for that? So I just wanted to put that out there. An RFP is basically what you're doing is promising that you're going to award a contract to somebody, right? You don't just put an RFP out just to get information. So to me, that just seems a little fuzzy. I also want to say, because President Obama has said there will be $75 million for cameras, why are we spending taxpayer dollars here when we should be working with the federal government, with our partners at the Department of Justice, to figure out how do we get the federal government to pay for these cameras if, in fact, we think they're a good idea? And I'm not assuming that they're a good idea. I sent each of you this morning an evaluation from five cities who have been using these cameras already. And when you read that report that I sent you via email, what you will find is that 60% of the time that deadly force or excessive force is used, the cameras are not on. And so that's a problem. What we know is that when police have discretion, a lot of information will not be on the cameras. And so having clear laws will be extremely important. Now, who cares about this information? I would think a good system would include making sure that any video, the videotape, let's assume we're doing this. If we do this, the videotape should go to an independent entity that has the ability to review the data, send it to the training bureau if there are training problems, send it to the investigative unit if there needs to be an investigation of force or other activity by the police, and make it available to the general public who will sue the police for misconduct, right? It can't be just a police thing that the police get to decide when to use it, they get to decide when to disclose it, they get to decide whether anything was wrong, right? It's got to be, if this is something for the community has to have a benefit from this process. And so, since I'm here representing Portland Right to the City Coalition, you may want to know what their mission statement is. The Right to the City Coalition commits to empowering working class people in Portland's political process, starting with a slate of progressive candidates for the 2016 election for city council and mayor. We are the women, people of color, LGBTQ, people with disabilities, immigrants, houseless, other working class people who have a different vision than Portland's current elected leaders, who are primarily responsive to big businesses. Our coalition is dedicated to ensuring that the priorities of working people are the city's priorities. Sorry, I just had to read it so that you'd know what it is. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. Okay, so we delivered to each commission's office yesterday a list of Portland Right to the City Coalition's demands. And I'm not going to go into all of them today, but I do want to focus on the cameras, which is the item that we are discussing primarily today. And so what we demand as preconditions before granting the consent for cameras, that body cameras be worn, as another surveillance tool and procedure already in use, we'd like prior to adoption that there must be a proven mechanism for holding police accountable for their misconduct prior to adoption. City Council must make the raw stop and frisk data available to the people. Because you remember, actually, we have a whole class of people that are stopped and searched and questioned that we don't even record the data. Even though the DOJ has asked us to do so, we still don't record that data. And we need that data. Should the people consent, given the complexity of this intended program, prior to adoption, we demand continued broad community influence over the adoption. So I heard Commissioner Fritz say we should have some community forums. I think there should be a community task force put together, because as each of you have said, we're talking about some really significant issues here. And so it's important that the community, and not just the handpicked advisory committees, but the regular public have an opportunity to weigh in on this. We also think that in conjunction with accountability, police accountability, that you should drop the appeal to Judge Simon about the Department of Justice and whether it's appropriate for us to go once a year and give Judge Simon an update. We think that, you know, it's part of accountability, it's part of transparency, and it just doesn't seem to make sense that we would reject the idea that a federal judge would have an independent perspective on what we're doing. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Walsh. Ms. Hardis, let me just clarify with you, what we had proposed on the 911 privacy was that the person in the public should have to give permission for that recording to be used before it would be released to the press or anybody else. And I'm assuming that in the case of a stop and frisk that you would want, or in any case that these videos might be used, that you would want the person in the public being videoed to have the right to decide whether or to be part of the decision on whether these things were released or not.
Well, I mean, I would certainly like the individual to have some say, but let's say there's a use of force that's captured on camera, right? There's an IAD investigation, there's an IPR investigation, and let's say that all those bodies clear the person. But the person believes that they've been treated inappropriately. Would that individual have the right to come and say, I would like that video because I want to take it to my lawyer and I want to have my lawyer file suit?
Right, but supposing that individual didn't want that video to be made available to the public, should they have that right?
They should have that right. But if there's a training objective, if this independent oversight looked at it and said, gee, we need to retrain police officers because if this is what they're doing, we need to retrain them, then they could be retrained with the video without necessarily being able to expose who the individual is who's been recorded.
So I very much agree with your suggestion for a task force with community involvement to tease through these really challenging and important issues. Thank you.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thank you. One quick clarification, though, I ought to mention that is, remember the provenance of this. We started on this a couple years ago. The council authorized the funds that we had a couple of months ago before the president made his announcement about the possible availability of federal funds. Obviously, if there are federal funds available for something that we in this community decide to do, whether it's build a light rail line or implement cameras, we will apply for them. Of course, you also know, because you're a former legislator, that in order for that funding to become real, the current United States Congress has to agree to a request from President Obama.
Right.
So I wish him well.
Me too.
Mayor, before we go to the next speaker, Dan and I are likely to want to ask Christine Moody a couple of questions about the difference between RFI, RFQ, and RFP. Could she be on tap at the end of the panel?
Let's make that happen, please.
Answer some questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individual for Justice. And originally, we were a supporter of the body cams. One of our members actually testified in front of Judge Simon asking that body cams be initiated in Portland. Since that time, one of the things that we have is New York. The person who was strangled in New York by the police department was on camera from the beginning to the end, and the grand jury could not come back with an indictment. So what it says to us is body cams are not the answer to the problem. The answer to the problem is to have a police department that we all trust.
Yes.
That's the answer. How you go about that, we're going to argue constantly about. But that's really the problem. One of the things that bothers us is, for instance, we're not sure what you're going to vote on today. We sit here and we listen to really good stuff, especially from Commissioner Salzman. And for the first time in a long time, I raised my hand in full support of something that the commissioner was saying. We have in front of us a bid that says the opportunity for 2014, and it went out November 28th, and it's got to be in by December 15th. This is the bid. So it's already in the process. So what is it that you're voting on? We don't know. We thought when we first came here that we were voting on a body cam, but we're not. Unless I completely misunderstood the mayor, we are voting on sending out a request to different corporations to say how much and what do you got for us? But you've already done it. This thing says you've done it already. So why are you voting on it?
I don't know if we've done it already or not, but we have to authorize an RFP before we can receive proposals.
Then this thing is wrong. Because if the bids have to be in by December 15th.
What are you referencing, please, Ms. Walsh?
I'll send it up to you, Amanda. You can look at it. It was given to me by a friend this morning. So it took me by surprise. And then with the explanation of what's going on this morning, this doesn't make any sense at all to take a vote at all, because you're already doing it.
We're not voting today, Joe. This is a regular
council.
No,
you're voting to authorize to go out and do the bids, and it's already in process.
I don't know. We'll take a look at this. But again, the council routinely gives bureaus permission. Hang on.
What?
The council routinely gives bureaus permission to seek proposals from the private sector, whether we're buying sewer pipe, automobiles, or cameras. We do it. This is a routine thing that we do. Now, again, this is a big issue. We understand it's a big issue, and that if we buy and implement body cameras, that's a big deal. But the authorization to a bureau to go ask for proposals is something that's a pretty everyday event around here. Now, what I don't know what
this... Well, apparently, I mean, what is it that you're voting on?
It does appear to be...
So, John, we'll get the Bureau to explain what this is. So, when you're done, go ahead and finish.
Okay, but I just want to say to all of you, this is the kind of stuff that causes us to get really nervous when you guys are doing something. You know, we look at this stuff and we say, what is that? You know, why are they voting on something they've already done? And when you come here and you say, well, I'm going to take this position before anybody speaks, it's really annoying. And that's happened a number of times.
We were not aware of this solicitation. Yeah. So
neither was I until this morning.
Thank you for bringing
it to our
attention.
A friend gave it to me, and it looks official to me, and it looks very pertinent to me. And, you know, my...
We'll find out. Lieutenant Scruggs is ready to answer.
Thanks, you.
Joe. Okay, John, why don't you come up and explain? I don't know if you've seen this document, but it looks like purchasing sent something out.
Again, Lieutenant Scruggs, Portland Police Bureau. So what you're looking at is an RFI. We wanted to get information from what is available from the product vendors out there to help us develop our RFP process. So this was just an information gathering. It closes here shortly. And vendors around the country and actually internationally are able to send us information about what kind of products they offer. And then we use that information to draft what we'd put in an RFP to go out to purchase.
So is this that first stage of the process that Ms. Hardesty was talking about, where you more informally and at less expense to the proposing company say, what do you got?
Absolutely. And then we're going to get a bunch of information, you know, specs on cameras, software, all that stuff. And that makes us have the ability to make a more informed RFP process.
I assume that council approval is not needed for purchasing to do a request for information.
Not to my understanding. Right. You don't need to approve an RFI. You need to approve an RFP.
We're not allowed to use acronyms around here. So,
Try not anyway.
Request for proposals, for request for qualifications, request for information. And just correct me if I'm wrong on this. The purpose of an RFQ, request for qualifications, or RFI, is to sort of survey the marketplace and find out, you know, the basic information. And that includes what are people selling these cameras for, and who's manufacturing what. Purpose of an RFP, request for proposal, is to find out in a competitive environment what's someone willing to bid to provide the services to us. So, in that area, we may get a better price than is the advertised price that you get through the RFI, because someone looking at the whole package might say that we'll discount, you know, our package a little bit to be competitive. That's how the public is assured that they're getting the best price. But for purposes of this stage of the process, isn't it sufficient for you to determine what the cost, isn't it sufficient for you to know who's manufacturing these cameras and what are they selling them for? And wouldn't that be adequate information prior to a determination of the council as to whether we're going to go forward with these cameras?
Yeah, well, I think so, but let me make sure I can clarify that. So the RFI is just for us to be able to figure out what all technologies out there, if it meets the needs that we think the Portland Police Bureau would want, audit trails in the software, the battery of the camera system lasts long enough to cover an entire shift, those kind of things. Once we get that information back,
That's how we draft the RFP proposal, that we, so we know that's in the marketplace, and we know what we could ask for, and then do the competitive bid process.
Right, but the competitive bid process is to ensure that you get the best value for that product. Why isn't it sufficient today to establish who makes these cameras and what they sell them for, recognizing that in a competitive process we may get a better price? But and to the point that Dan made about cart and horse, why would we ask someone to go through the time and expense of going through a competitive process when we cannot in good conscience tell them that we are going to actually go through? That is different. Mayor mentioned things like sewer pipes and other things. We do that routinely, but we also don't decide after the fact not to replace the sewer pipe or do other things. Here there's a policy question which we can't possibly resolve until some date in the future. And that's going to require legislative action, community input, and some other things. Why wouldn't we just call it good to say that whatever we get through the RFI request for information or the RFQ request for qualifications is sufficient for your purposes at this stage?
I don't have a great answer for that. When we originally put this together, we were not going to do two steps. I've actually done a great deal of research. In fact, I've been to a conference on and looked at a lot of the vendors that are out there and looked at all the cameras, the features, and the software. We were directed to do this process, and so that's how we came to this. But procurement is the one who told us we need to do an RFI before we ever do an RFP. But that was not in our plan. And then
Ms. Moody is on her way, so we'll find out.
So that's how we were directed. So I just followed their lead. But we have done a tremendous amount of research on this product, on policies, implications, state law. So we're well versed in all the way to the technology to policy. But what we were trying to accomplish with this RFI is, did we miss anything? And is there just one piece there that we didn't catch? We didn't see at a conference we might have been at or in some of my other contacts throughout the law enforcement
community. I think you've given great answers to these questions. This has been a very good discussion. But I think that the missing piece here, we're not grappling with the issue of whether we can afford the cameras. That's what a competitor...
Well, we might be.
Well, but that has never been teed up as the primary consideration here. The primary policy consideration of this council is, should we have the cameras and can we have adequate safeguards? And we can't answer that question today because there's a process to follow. And so before we ask a vendor to put a price on paper, which may put them at a competitive disadvantage in some future solicitation in another city, don't we have to – I think Christine may suggest to us that we normally make some assurance that we're going to go to fruition unless we find out that the price is prohibitive. But this – I've not heard price be raised as the principal issue here. The mayor has said – that if we don't get the protections through the legislature, he may not go forward at this time. And that's different than whether we can afford to go forward.
I can answer that as far as your
Please,
cost.
Go ahead.
So we know kind of a ballpark cost of what it could be going into this. The question still remains, though. There are some vendors that will offer, you know, audit trails in their software or won't, something that's important to us. And so in developing this process for the request for proposal, we're going to get to a place where we can know what we want, and then with the request for proposal process, we think we're going to be a lot farther behind if we try to take this one step at a time. So if we don't wait to develop a policy before, and policy is going to also involve technology, because there are some technologies out there where you might want to adapt your policy to the available technology. So if you wait on any one of these steps, and there's like four or five steps that have to happen, we could be looking all the way to next year. And if it's the intent of this council, and we're here to listen, obviously, and take direction, but if it's the intent of the council to get body-worn cameras on our officers as soon as possible, we have to keep these moving pieces going forward, including community involvement and a decision on how our policy looks. So this is just like one of those pieces of puzzle, and it's not an ideal process. You would know exactly what's out there. You would buy it. You'd develop a policy, and you move forward. This is a super complex issue, and it's not even at the technology level. It's at the community level. How much, you know, transparency do we want in our police? Where does that intersect with privacy? These are big issues for us to decide, But if I stop on one part of the process, moving forward on if it's the intent of this council to move to body-worn cameras, then we're going to be a year out or more. And so that's, I think, why we're trying to dual-track this. It's not the cleanest process. I freely admit that. But I also think it's a very deliberative process. We're having meetings. We're looking at other policies throughout the United States, talking with other law enforcement officials, looking at the best practices that put out by PERF, an IACP, and other organizations. So we're doing a very deliberate, process here, but we're trying to move it in a way that we think that we'll meet the community concerns of getting body-worn cameras on our officers as soon as possible.
Can we bring up our chief procurement officer?
Sure. Come on up, Christine. Might as well stay here, John. But, and then we'll get back to public testimony.
So I guess one of the questions percolating up here is what exactly this competitive solicitation means. Is it an RF? It's a request for proposals, and if so, we have the right to reject all proposals. We're not obligating ourselves to spend any money with a particular vendor that may emerge as an attractive vendor. Is that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what I understand the situation to be.
Commissioner Saltzman, Christine Moody, Procurement Services. We have two different issues here. One, we have a request for information that is currently out on the street. And so that has no financial obligation to it. It's information gathering. It's seeing what is out there as far as giving the city information so that we can do a further evaluation to help develop the specifications for a request for proposal. What you have before you today is asking for authorization for the funding for that and that authorization to go out for that request for proposal. Once there would be an evaluation after the RFP with the selected vendors, then we would come back to council to ask for authorization for a contract.
So we're not obligated to award any money to a vendor through this process?
Not through the RFI process.
What about for the RFP?
For the RFP process.
Are we required to do it for the lowest bidder?
No, this will be a request for proposal, so it would be a best value.
Right,
and that would come back to council for authorization.
Would we be legally or morally obligated to buy if from whatever the chosen vendor is?
No.
When's the last time we did? I'll give you a terrible analogy. We do an RFP for rails, because we're putting down rails to run the Portland-Milwaukee light rail. And by the time you come back to us for a proposal and to finalize a contract, we say, we don't think rails are the future anymore. We're moving to spacecraft. So we're not going to actually put any money into the Portland-Milwaukee light rail. Does that present legal or moral problems for the people that have taken the time to put together proposals, compete, and that now are at the point where they think they're going to get a contract?
I would divert to the city attorney's office, but I don't think it causes any legal issues. As far as good faith, we're going to go out and ask vendors to propose and spend their own time and money to propose in good faith that we are actually going to award a contract.
And that could, by the way, include MWB ESB firms.
That's correct.
So firms that we're trying to get into the stream, we may be asking them to invest time and money in a process that it is potentially, is possible the council is going to either defer or pull the plug on.
Yes. So typically we're issuing bids or issuing requests for proposals in good faith that we are actually going to award a contract.
So if we issue an RFP and then we find out we can't get the adequate privacy protections we're seeking from the legislature, we're not subject to being sued by a vendor for breaching good faith, I guess.
No, we have the right to reject all proposals.
Okay. Does the uncertainty about our action potentially have an impact on who participates in the RFP?
It could, especially if there's legislative changes that need to happen, and those are unknown at the time that we're issuing that request for proposal.
We've had a very thoughtful presentation from the police bureau about lots of moving pieces and trying to move this in an imperfect way forward. And I think you made a very compelling case. What would be the harm to the process of in essence, completing the RFI, request for information, and looking at that, but postponing the RFP until we have a better sense from the mayor as to whether we're likely to get the protections that we need to move forward.
From my standpoint, I don't think there's a harm to the process. And so it all goes back to the timeline for the mayor's office and Portland Police Bureau.
Okay, that's worth thinking about. Also, I'm also assuming, or at least was assuming, that before the president made his suggestion, that the remaining costs of implementing body cameras in Portland would be borne by our budget, and that that would be queued up for this council and our budget deliberations in the spring. It may be the case that the president's proposal will get approved by Congress and that there'll be federal funds available, and that'll influence how we pay for the total costs of doing whatever we ultimately choose to do. So I guess we ought to figure that into the timeline as well.
Well, I think that's another point where we might get to know,
right,
given that the ongoing operating and maintenance expenses are estimated to $400,000 to $750,000.
Right.
So there's a question of, is this the best use of, if we were to appropriate that additional money to the police bureau, is this the best use of that additional amount of funding? Should we
have haven't appropriated any funding for operating. We've appropriated $800,000 and change for capital.
No, but we would need to, right? In the current budget, upcoming
right,
budget
exactly.
process.
Yeah.
So that's going
and
to
that,
be a...
And that proposal, as you know, starts getting assembled next month. So so we don't have a lot of time to decide, do we want to put something in our budget next year? We have some, but not a lot.
Christine, what, just in very rough terms, what's the difference between the data you collect through a request for information, which could include, let's say, the pricing information from these various vendors, and the information you get from a request for proposal where someone actually has to make a competitive offer, and they may... considering that it's a competitive process, they may lower their price in order to get our business.
So correct me if I'm wrong. In the request for proposal, it doesn't look like we're asking for pricing. So right now we're asking for the technical capabilities of the cameras themselves for further analysis.
Not price?
We're not asking for a bid price.
No, we could issue an addenda and ask for some general pricing. I mean, this is not complete enough, I think, for anybody to give us some solid pricing.
And if I could backtrack a couple of different things here. One, the $75 million that was proposed federally would outfit about 75,000 officers spread out throughout the United States. So, yeah, we could get a portion of that, but we're looking at about that $75 million would go to roughly about 75,000 officers. So we could compete for that if there's a grant process or however that develops. All the vendors are aware that this is an emerging law and legislative issue. So I have been in contact with vendors for at least the last 6 or 7 months. They all know that there are legislative changes that need to occur. Oregon is not the only state that's facing this. I have counterparts across the United States. They're all facing this very same issue, and the vendors are very aware of it, and they're sensitive to it. So many of them are actually tracking legislative processes through the other states. So it's not unknown if we're going out for an RFP and we would say, you know, contingent upon state lobbying change, they're already aware of that. I can tell you that probably many of the vendors that have maybe put in it for this RFI are already aware that we're looking at the statute and we're trying to change that. So it's not unknown in the industry. It wouldn't be unfair to say, you know, hey, the law didn't change and it's not going to be effective. There are some places that actually prohibit body-worn cameras altogether. And they don't make any exemption. They just prohibit them. So you're looking at a very changing landscape. We're not on the bleeding edge of this kind of technology, but we're on the leading edge because the legislature hasn't dealt with it, and the courts, quite frankly, have not dealt with this altogether. So we're up towards the front, and it's going to be a bumpy process. I think we'll get it right, but it's going to be bumpy.
Good point. Thank you. Other questions for them? Again, stand by, John, and we may need you some more. Thank you, Christine. So let's take more public testimony, please.
The next people are Michael Alexander, Lightning, and Crystal Alinsky. She's back in the room.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Is it possible to ask for an additional 2 minutes?
Of course.
Of time? Thank you.
Appreciate your waiting.
Mr. Mayor and Council. Hands up, don't shoot.
Well, Michael, Michael, put your name in the record. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Michael Alexander, President and CEO of the Urban League of Portland. I can't breathe. Black Lives Matter. Each of these phrases has taken on tremendous significance over the past few months and ignited a new resolve to address the ongoing concerns regarding police accountability and the use of force. They've also been associated with the